that's kind of the conundrum before Airbnb came. You could go buy Class A properties, really nice high-end properties, but you were never going to cash flow on that because you were having to buy them for so much money. Well, the short-term rental gives you the ability to do that.
You're listening to 5-Hour Real Estate Week, where you'll learn to consistently buy real estate in only 5 hours a week. So if you're ready to invest in real estate, achieve financial freedom, and own the lifestyle you deserve, even with your job, this is the show for you. Now, here's your host, Mike Butler.
Okay, hello, and welcome to another episode of the 5-Hour Real Estate Week podcast. And my name is Mike Butler, and today's topic is Winter Wednesdays, and I've got a superstar investor expert extraordinaire, Mr. Jay Bowman, who happens to live right now in Louisville, Kentucky, same town where I grew up in. And a little bit about Jay, he started off with a job and got exposed to real estate investing, got his real estate license, became a broker, had his brokerage, invested in single family homes. He was able to walk away from his job and do real estate investing full time. He's mastered the short-term rentals. Some people call it Airbnb. Some people call it VRBO or Home Away is what I like to do. I don't like Airbnb because it makes me think rent rooms by the hour. Okay. That just rubs me a little bit wrong going back to my police days there, Jay. And now he's moving on to bigger and better things. I'll let him introduce that. But first of all, I want to thank you, Jay, for taking time out of your precious day to spend sharing your experience and knowledge and expertise for all of our listeners on the podcast here.
Well, thanks for having me, Mike. I appreciate it.
So as for starters, okay, tell us about you live in Louisville now and family life and what's your daily routine?
Sure. I have children, so I have no daily routine. It's pretty much circles around them. No, I live here in Louisville, Kentucky. I'm married with two kids, and they get up in the morning. I get them off to school. I hit the gym, come into the office, dig into real estate until it's time to go home and get them, and then prep dinner for them and get their homework help and all of that right until they go to bed. By that time, I have so much energy, I pass out on my own bed, and then I start the day all over again.
Okay, so I see you smiling, you're just grinning from ear to ear, but is this a lifestyle that you wanted at this point in your life?
I didn't imagine that anybody who has kids, I don't think anybody can imagine what it's like before you have kids. You just do it, and that's what it is, but it's great. Yeah, you have two little people smiling at you and thinking you're the greatest thing in the world. You just lie to them and tell them that you are, and you just keep on doing that.
That won't last too long until they get to their teens and they know everything and you're an old fogey. But what I'm getting to is real estate has allowed you to do that and to have that special time with them every day. And whereas if you were stuck in a job, you wouldn't be able to do that, odds are.
That's correct. Yeah. So my choice is that I come into the office. I'm not made to come into my own office. I come into the office because I love to dig into the deals, to search through the piles of coal for that one gem that my partner and I would look to take down and move forward. And we continue to build long-term wealth through our processes.
Okay. So if you would, the quality of life is what it's all about. Okay. So that's why we do what we do, so that we can achieve true financial independence and do what we want and pursue our passions and that lifestyle that we dream about. But tell us about when you got started. I understand you had a job, and then who flipped the switch or exposed you to, hey, this real estate thing, I think I could do something with it.
Yeah. I was working in film in Los Angeles. And I'd left there, came back and worked in television in Missouri, what I was trained on. But there was a woman back in St. Louis who had sold a ton of houses, friend of my grandparents, and she was extremely passionate about it. And I thought, you know what? That looks amazing. I think I could do that as well. And so I decided at that point to get my realtor's license and my broker's license, become a real estate agent. It's not the path I chose to go down in the long run, but it did lead me into this investing career, which has served me really, really well. From there, I moved to Louisville, Kentucky, got involved with our Real Estate Investors Association, met a lot of people who helped educate me and guide me over the years in this. And it's been a great benefit to achieve what I've accomplished so far.
There's a lot of folks, including myself, we graduated from our full-time jobs to, let's say, full-time investing. What was the formula that you may have had to make that decision or to take that leap?
Yeah, I had my real estate company going here in Louisville, and so that was providing income. I was buying and flipping houses. And at some point, I remember I was working at a mortgage company, and I just looked around and I was like, I think that I could do better leaving this job and committing myself full time to go out and actually identify properties that I could buy.
That's not the answer I was looking for. That's not the answer I was looking for. So was it X number of houses? Was it so much amount of money, passive income coming in monthly that gave you the confidence or the cushion to reach out on your own?
It was the revenue that had coming. I think that's it for a lot of people, is that they get comfortable when they can have that revenue or that income coming in from these properties monthly that allows them to feel like they can separate themselves from their job. And that's what it was for me, that I built up enough income and knew that I could walk away from what I was doing and still financially be okay.
Do you remember what your happy camper number was to... you had to have before you pulled the trigger on that, or would consider pulling the trigger?
I was much younger and it was a long time ago. I would probably say that it was probably between $2,000 and $3,000. And that was roughly 14, 15 years ago that I made that decision.
Wow. Okay. A lot of folks have a little bit higher number than that.
Well, I would hope so today.
I know I did. Definitely. So you started off investing in single family houses as rentals?
Correct. Yeah.
And that worked out pretty good. And before we push the record button here, you said, wow, I could buy a house for this. My payment's $400 a month. I could rent it for $700 and I make $300 and don't do anything. Okay.
Yeah.
So that's a mindset that all of us have when it gets started. It's a little bit more than that after you get into it, but that was pretty cool. So you started investing in single family rentals, right?
Yes, correct.
And then you got your real estate license and your broker's license. And what's really neat is look how Jay took his being a real estate agent / broker, complemented his investing business. And he created the 60-day, what's it called?
It's 60-day realty.
60-day realty. And for a flat fee, okay, whatever that fee was, and he deals only with investors because owner-occupants just wear you out. And so for a flat fee, investors could get their properties put on the MLS. So if they were doing Dolphins or flips or retails or anything like that, he helped them out that way. And that's still cooking today, isn't it?
It is. Yeah. Once again, we just really like to prefer to work with investors. It's flat fee up front and then just a little percentage on the back end. And it's enough to keep it going and to keep that active real estate license and to make it worthwhile.
Yeah. And so then we discovered, all of us about the same time, this Airbnb VRBO thing. And you're a master at that. He teaches classes on it now, guys. And you got 9 of those?
We have 9 doors. Yes. We have a triplex and then 6 single families.
So is there a rule of thumb that you could perhaps share with our audience, our listeners, yes, investors?
I'm a big proponent of short-term rentals, while major cities are not. And I'll give you a reason why. One, each town has their own specific rules to what you can and cannot do. So Louisville's rules are very different from Lexington's, which is different from Cincinnati's, which is different from Columbus's. So you have to know your area's rules. 2, you can buy those, as long as you abide by those rules, you can buy a single family and say you buy a 3-bedroom, 1-bath for $150,000, and maybe that would rent for $1,200 to $1,400. Or if it's in the right location and designed and decorated right, you could potentially gross double, triple, or quadruple that amount on that property. So for instance, the last property we bought here in Louisville, and this is a larger property, you can do it with smaller ones. We bought one in a popular area here off Bardstown Road in Louisville, a 5-bedroom, 2-bath for $460,000, but we expect that $460,000. So if you think that mortgage with taxes and insurance is roughly, I don't know, $3,500 a month, it is expected to gross $120,000 this year. So you're
$10,000 a month.
$10,000 a month. Now, it fluctuates throughout the seasons, but it's a great way to build, not only buy much nicer properties in nicer areas, and yet they would still cash flow, because that's kind of the conundrum before Airbnb came. You could go buy Class A properties, really nice high-end properties, but you were never going to cash flow on that because you were having to buy them for so much money. Well, the short-term rental gives you the ability to do that.
So the numbers don't work for making it a straight rental. What's your opinion or gut on this Airbnb, VRBO, and market saturation?
I don't believe the market saturation will occur. And I've had conversations with other people about this simply because the individual who goes and says, well, I'm just going to do this with one house. They don't know how much work is actually required in doing that as a full-time job. My manager can probably effectively handle 20 properties total. And if you think, oh no, I can do 40, it is an entirely different business. And one person who goes, well, it's just me, and I'm just going to do this one house. It's a lot of work because when your cleaner doesn't show up, you're going to change sheets. You're the one vacuuming. Yeah. You're the ones washing dishes. You've become a cleaner slash maid to your own property. And if you're not careful, it creates what Mike likes to call a J-O-B. You have to be very careful about that. But if you do it right, then it can be very successful.
So it boils down to systems. So
absolutely. It's all, yeah. Everything is about systems.
Yeah. Don't reinvent the wheel. So now you've got your single family rentals that are cooking and allowed you to get to transition into the short-term rental market. Okay. And you talked about pay attention to not only just the rules, but there are laws in certain cities and counties and states and stuff. Don't just jump in and think you're going to do that, because Louisville has like, what, 1,000-foot rule on residential?
Yeah, we have a 600-foot rule. So if the property, and this just applies to Louisville, if the property is residentially zoned, so zoning comes into a lot of it, you have to go get what's called a CUP or a conditional use permit. And you can't get one of those if you are within 600 feet of another CUP. And yeah. So if there is one that is 599 feet and 3/4 inches away, they will not give you that CUP. And if you try and rent it on Airbnb, they will work to shut you down and start fining you for it.
Not just Airbnb, but the city will, whatever. No,
the city. The city does it.
And okay. Airbnb. And then the other thing, guys, now remember, Jay just cited our local laws about that. Okay. And a lot of it has to do with zoning. But the other thing is, you've got these other little mini cities splattered, scattered, and smothered like White Castle Hash Browns, and even a neighborhood association and stuff that outlaw short-term rentals. Right. So yeah. Do your homework before you pull a trigger on doing something like that. And because look what Jay just said. You buy a house for $460,000, it's going to be a good short-term rental. You can't do it. They won't allow it. What are you going to do then? Okay, so do your homework, and education never stops. So now he's mastered the single family rentals, and he's got his real estate broker's license, and he's mastered the short-term rentals. And now tell us about the new kid on the block for Jay.
So I was the construction part of housing. It can be a definite grind. And so you have to be careful with that. And about 2 years ago, I was just really tired of the fixing and flipping. It can be a grind over the long term. And I've been doing it a while. And I was looking for an out. And a friend of mine out of Chicago passionately spoke about self-storage. And I began to listen really heavily, educate myself. And so I partnered with a friend of mine here in town. And we both were leaving that industry, that fixing and flipping. And we both kind of entered into self-storage. And so we've begun to purchase self-storage facilities now. We bought our first one in Missouri in the fall of 2020. And then since then, we have bought 3 more with a 5th one under contract at this point.
Wow. And with a 5th one under contract. So how about your 60-second elevator pitch on why you chose that route and jumped into self-storage, mini storage, whatever you call it?
Tenants and toilets are on their way out. That's the easiest way. That's your 60-second elevator is tenants and toilets are limited. We don't have to deal with evictions. We deal with lien laws, and evictions, in my opinion, they're hard to deal with. If anybody's had to deal with them for the last 2 years, we didn't have to deal with that. We have lien laws. And so when somebody stops paying, we lock them out of a gate and lock them out of their unit. And until they pay us their $70 plus their $7 late fee, they don't get access to grandma's dresser and their old computer or whatever else they got stored in there. And if they don't ever pay us, we just put it online and auction it, clean the unit out in 20 minutes, and it's ready to rent again immediately. There's no paint, there's no carpet, there's no leaking sinks, there's no toilets, there's no tenants.
No furnaces, no, yeah. So what's the number of doors is the right number of units, let's say, that you've acquired in the last 2 years?
You know, we would probably measure it by the square footage, because the number of doors can change, because you'll have a 10 foot or you'll have a 3 foot door. And most of those garage doors don't change a lot in sizes, but that 10 foot door can hold a 10 by 30, or it can hold a 20 by 20, or it can hold that. So we're close almost 100,000 square feet today.
Wow.
Amongst the four facilities that we own.
And none of them are in Louisville?
No, we bought our first one in Missouri. The other three are in Indiana. And the fifth one that we have is in Louisiana, or that we have under contract is in Louisiana.
How about one of the unexpected hurdles that you found and you're pursuing that? Has it been financing? Like, has lenders or banks treat those a whole lot different than single family rentals?
Yeah, single family rentals, they can look and they can pretty much determine, you buy a house that has nobody in it and they know what that house is worth. So if you, for instance, if you have two houses that look exactly the same and this one is renting for $1,000, then you could say this one would rent for $1,000. Well, if you go and you sell the first one for $150,000, the bank would say, oh, well, that one will sell for $150,000 as well. But what if you go, well, my rent is higher in the second one, I should get more money. The bank goes, no, doesn't work that way. The houses look the same and they're right next to each other. Those houses are pretty much worth the exact same thing. It doesn't work that way in storage. Storage is, it's driven by the net operating income. It's how much after you have your revenue minus your expenses, how much are you making? And that determines the value of that facility. So you could have two facilities the exact same, but one of them is bringing in $200,000 in NOI and one of them is bringing $100,000 in NOI. And those two businesses are valued very, very differently.
Yeah, NOI, just because I was there once upon a time, net operating income. So let's say you buy the thing, you pay cash for it. And so you got all your rents coming in, then you pay all your expenses, and then NOI is the net operating income or your profit on a, and so that's where they figured the cap rate and things like that. So the financing is as easy or is it cumbersome?
No, it can be trickier. So we're going through that right now. If the facility that we're looking at is about 40% occupied, it's in great condition, but it's terribly mismanaged. And so that is a risk for the bank. The bank goes, whoa, does he know what he's doing? What kind of risk is this? And how long is it going to take them to fill this facility up? And what are the other competitors around them? They have serious concerns when you have a facility like that. While if you have a single family house, they're going, oh, it just needs some paint and some flooring and maybe a new toilet and you're renting it out and it'll be done really fast. Well, when you have to fill 160 units, it takes a little bit of time to accomplish. So the banks have concerns about that. And it takes them roughly about 3 weeks to analyze the deal. And then it goes to a committee for a decision, because usually these are pretty expensive. The one that we're looking at is just over $1.8 million. And so they look a lot closer at $1.8 million as opposed to buying a $60,000 house. And they take their own sweet time, making sure that everything, the I's are dotted and the T's are crossed before they open up their purse strings.
So for the most part, are you guys able to do it in the kiosk thing with owner absent and still secure? And
yeah, we don't have anybody on site. We don't even have a kiosk. We have an automated gate so that you have a keypad. And people, when they rent a unit online or they can call into a call center, they're given a passcode. And so they're able to go to the facility, put their passcode in, gate slides open, they're already headed to unit 106. And from there, they can open up their unit, put their stuff in. And we know that they've entered because we're the ones who gave them the passcode. And we can watch them over cameras. And we know when they come and when they go per the...
I got to share this with you, Jay. Years ago when I got started, I had a buddy of mine. Actually, he was my HVAC guy, and he had bought some homemade self-storage. So imagine, let's say, a 20-car garage with separate individual doors for each of the rental units. He put walls up, and it was over off 7th Street over by Shively. And he was all excited and pumped up about it. And then he had some folks who rented like four of the units, and they stopped paying. And he was a little, he was excited at first, and he got frustrated. Over there, we're not too far from Rubber Town, all the chemical companies are. And then there was Seagram's fell by the wayside. Now it's some kind of vegetable oil company or something like that. Well, whoever he rented it to, they were the contractor to haul off toxic waste from these chemical plants over in Rubbertown, and they put them in 55-gallon barrels, and they dumped them all, stored them all in his in his mini storage. So I went, whoa, I don't want that to happen to me. Nope. So I kind of steered clear for a while. But the richest guy in Kentucky, self-storage.
Yeah.
And it is unbelievable. So before we wrap this puppy up, what are some things that Mike Butler Services and training and things like that has helped you in your real estate investing business?
The first book, in fact, is it over here? It is. The first book that I ever bought was Landlording on Autopilot. It kept me, so I bought one before I even bought my first house. I had Landlording on Autopilot, read the thing from cover to cover, and I thought, oh man, this would have been such a nightmare if I had not found this book. And it saved me. I tell everybody that it has saved me from ramming my head into brick walls many a time when I started out. I even bought, even at the end of my single family investing, I bought the second version where it had the updates to it, because so much technology has changed everything. And even then I was like, oh yeah, there's so many tidbits in that book. It was pretty amazing.
So that's great. And so Jay always attends education events. You heard him talk about Chicago, where a buddy of his told him about the self-storage. But the biggest thing to gather from this interview, and thank you, Jay, for being on here, is it all began with single families.
Yep.
And so you can go to whatever level you want. If you want to buy your own zip code and compete with Donald Trump, you can do that. So it all began with the single family rentals. Get the book. And I want to thank you, Jay, for sharing your wisdom, your experience, your pretty smooth road of getting where you want, but you want to work smarter, not harder, and graduate from tenants and toilets, and that's totally up to you. Congratulations. Kudos. And I guess it's about time to go pick your kids up from school.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it, Mike.
Okay. Any final words of wisdom that you want to tell the folks on this call?
Yeah, it really, a lot of this, there's not a problem with single family at all. It's the route. I just chose to go a different route at this point in my life. But there is, the one thing you need to do is get educated and take action. You can get old, you can get educated all you want, but if you don't take action, nothing's going to start for you.
Yeah, paralysis of analysis. Don't get stuck with that. So I need your help, guys, please. If you like what you're learning here, click the follow button or the subscribe button. I don't know where it's at, but it's probably up here somewhere. And buy my number one bestseller book. It's Landlording on Autopilot. You can get that on Amazon. And sign up for our free power lunches. It's a free investor trainings I do every Tuesday at 12 noon at MikeButler.com. So with that, adios, and have a wonderful day. And to your continued success, Jay, you're awesome. Thank you.
Thanks, Mike.
Glad you joined us for another episode of 5-Hour Real Estate Week. The best thing you can do now is put this information to action. To help you get started, Mike created a free resource for you called How to Buy 50 Houses a Year, Even with Your Job. Download it now by going to MikeButler.com/50houses. And we'll see you on the next episode.